something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back at the Sunset Tower Hotel on a glorious, sunny, yet very cool and crisp day in Los Angeles. We're about to have lunch with one of the most beautiful people in Hollywood. And I don't just mean physically, because she's gorgeous, but also inside. Sharon Stone, Oscar-nominated actress, a Golden Globe winner, the star of Casino, Basic Instinct. It's super fun. It's super chill. We actually eat, so I hope you're hungry.
I am, and good. I'm so happy to see you.
Thank you. Me too. But what I love about Sharon, what inspires me about Sharon, is her commitment to our community, my community, the LGBTQ plus community. She has been an advocate for raising awareness with HIV/AIDS. She has been the face and the fundraiser for AMFAR, the American Federation for AIDS Research. It's a big deal. And she's stood in the forefront of making sure women and men get paid the same. She's just a rock star.
And then we're doing fries or salad?
Oh, we're doing fries.
Nice and crispy. Right, yeah. We're laying in. We're leaning in.
We are leaning in. So pull up and relax and grab your rosé and get ready, because she also is super cool and a fun, outspoken person. Hi.
Okay, hi.
Hi, Sharon Stone. I'm so happy you're here on Table for Two, and we're having lunch together. This is a dream.
I'd have lunch with you anytime.
Would you?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes, I think we should just be having lunches.
Why are we not? This is like the thing with LA. Like, we should just have lunches and chill out.
Yes.
You are so much to me, and I'm going to tell you a little story. So the first time I saw you, you don't know, but it was 1992. It was brunch.
Year of my fame.
Who's on third? Mm. Remember Who's on Third, that restaurant? I don't know.
Over by Joanne.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you were sitting there with a bunch of guys. And I remember looking at you and being like, she's so beautiful. She's amazing. And what you did, so I'd like to sort of begin our conversation today, because this is all about just a connection. And what I believe is the beauty of a meal is the romance of a meal. You know, I was young.
People forget that. It's like people don't ask each other for dates anymore.
I know.
They want to text and hook up.
Yeah.
It's like they don't romance. They don't seduce. It's not interesting, frankly.
It isn't. It's everything we had growing up.
Yeah, it was so...
It was titillating. It was like, you didn't know.
It
was poetry.
Right.
It's a beautiful word to use.
Yes.
I mean, at that time, you were hitting, you were becoming...
Sharon Stone,
which we'll talk about.
Who ran off with my name and identity.
Right, which I want to know about. But what you were also doing, which led to, was You are a truth teller.
I am. So I'm not out here looking to get people as I'm a very big Cheryl Lee Ralph fan.
Right.
Like I've known Cheryl, I've known Cheryl since we were kids in waiting rooms trying out for the same jobs in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the most warm, loving, generous, kind. You know, the first time I met her, she had a bag of licorice wheels. And I was sitting next to her, sharing her licorice wheels. And
wait, hold the licorice. Tony, Sharon Stone, let's order some lunch. We have to eat.
I mean, to see you. So nice. Boy, you have a face to paint, Tony.
Right, doesn't he?
Well, I appreciate that.
Look at that face.
Yeah, Bruce is just, you know, buttering me up and stuff. But I'll take it.
No, you have
no. Well, when you have Sharon Stone saying
I'm going to start blushing, okay?
You do. You have a face to paint.
Bam, bam. You know, this is lunch, babe.
Well, I'm going to have the Tower Burger because it's so amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And do you have any gluten-free thing you can stick it on?
I can do like a gluten-free bread if you want, or I can do it with a lettuce wrap.
I'll do the gluten-free bread toasted.
All right. And how do you want the burger cooked?
Well, toasted. I like the burger medium. I like those onions. You saute them, right? I like that.
And do you want cheddar, blue, or Gruyere cheese?
Gruyere.
Then we're doing fries or salad for the
salad. Oh, we're doing fries.
And with your body?
Nice and crispy.
Right,
we're laying in. We're leaning in.
We are leaning in. And, you know, I do my classic, my chopped salad with chicken.
You got it.
I'm digging it.
Okay. Right.
Did you want anything else to drink, or is water okay for you?
I like, I'll have sparkling.
Sparkling water?
Sparkling water, and maybe I'll have an iced coffee.
Iced coffee?
Well, you're going off the rails, baby.
I know. Say again?
Just black. You want any milk on that?
I'll have milk on the side. Okay. I know I am. I've had two already. But like I'm like jacked up. I'm sitting here with. All right. So, well, I was really leaning into your sort of amazing commitment to AMFAR and to raising the awareness to the amount of money and to your commitment to HIV/AIDS and what you've done as a human.
AIDS, breast cancer, homelessness.
Homelessness. Like, was that always a part of...
It was a part of my upbringing.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it was a big part of my upbringing. You know, it's not like I came from wealth.
No.
But
I've read your book.
In my universe, we weren't poor.
Right.
It's hard to explain that when you'd say, like, my dad made 14 grand a year,
right.
But we weren't poor.
Right.
So I grew up in a very small rural community where, like, you know, there were like 90 people in my school, right? Kids drove their tractors to school in the morning after they finished their farm chores.
Right.
Right. So we had 2 acres, which is two and a half acres, which is a big parcel of land when it has next to it a ravine with its own stream where we would walk down the edge of the ravine and, you know, get the ice in the winter and put it in a bucket and have fun making ice cream in the basement with the crank thing. And my dad built a tree house on the side of the ravine with a back door that had a rope with knots and we could jump out and swing across the ravine. And he put bunk beds in the treehouse, and you know, when lightning struck that tree, he brought it down with a pulley and made it into a playhouse for my sister and me, and you know what I mean.
Yeah,
very idyllic kind of childhood.
Yeah,
but we had neighbors, you know, and by neighbors I mean like a mile away,
right,
who had 8 kids and were much poorer than we were. So we provided their Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, and it was like a secret. Like that we drove with the lights out in the car and put it on their doorstep and put their presents and that kind of stuff. And it was really great. And when my parents went to somebody's house for dinner, they left early. And of course, my mother, per usual, had a wet washcloth and a plastic bag in her bag. And they would stop in a field. And my dad would walk out into the field with a big newspapers. And he would cut a gigantic bundle of wildflowers.
Right.
and bundle them with binder's twine and put them in the back of the car. And then my mom would wash his hands with the washcloth in her thing, and they would wrap it with, you know, that's what they would take for dinner, was this gigantic bundle of wildflowers.
Right. That was a romance too, your parents.
My parents were wildly in love with each other.
It's a beautiful story.
I mean, they fell in love. She got pregnant at 16. Yeah. He was 17. They both had no parents.
Right.
You know, my dad came from an extremely wealthy oil family, and the oil well blew when he was little, when he was four, and killed everybody. And then they were suddenly went from great wealth to destitution.
Right. Right. You said your his nephew or somebody took over the business.
Yeah, his nephew, who was 18.
Yeah.
Because women, even though my grandmother's money was in this, women didn't get the money.
Right.
And this is why my dad became such a diehard feminist.
Yeah.
Because the 18-year-old nephew got all the money,
right,
and, of course, blew it at the track.
Right, right. So, killed the business.
So a couple of years, and everybody was completely broke. And, you know, my dad just could not fathom that his mother, who was my grandma Leela, who was tough as nails. I mean, this is a woman who walked her property in a Schiaparelli suit with her German Shepherd Rex and his studded collar and her blackjack in her other hand, you
right,
know,
right,
that she wasn't getting her due.
Yeah.
Because she was certainly capable and tough enough to handle it.
Yeah. Reading about your childhood was absolutely amazing because I felt
well, when you
that,
lose everything.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you lose everything stuff, and right, you, what you have to constantly remember is you don't lose everything.
Right.
You lose stuff.
Right. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the crocodiles will give it to you, and the crocodiles will take it away. And the great thing is, as long as the crocodiles don't get you,
right, you're good.
Good.
So now you're like this movie star, and now you're also, because it's in your DNA, you're leaning in, you're giving back, you're separating, you're not so, because at that time,
well, that's the point of fame, I think.
Yeah, right?
Is it's, you got this big purple dinosaur
right,
hanging on to you everywhere you go. If that dinosaur isn't working for you and for the people,
yeah,
it's going to eat you.
What was your lean into HIV AIDS?
Well, I was in Cannes, and I got asked to fill in for a night for Elizabeth Taylor. And it was an incredibly moving experience. I mean, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Because while I had been in the modeling industry, which has been very good to me, very good to me.
She started that
when I was 19.
The Ford agency, that whole
in
thing,
New York. And when I, which I can say, is the business where I have really learned the most.
Right.
I have learned more about myself and others in that business than anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken me around the world. It's introduced me to more people. And there's more loyalty and family. And we have to get down to work in
yeah,
that business
right,
than in any other business I've ever worked in. But not all of these businesses are kind
right,
back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in my business, the modeling business, we look out for each other, and we don't want the business to just go by the wayside, and we want to look out for each other. At least I do.
Right.
And I can say I have tremendous respect for people like Anna Wintour and these photographers that have carried endless pounds of cameras on their backs for their whole lives.
Yeah.
And like I do in the movie business,
mm-hmm,
when I see people dragging cable and the rain is coming down and I'm not on set,
yeah,
I would be inclined to drag some cable.
Anna was on, sat with me at lunch, and she's an incredible woman. She has your passion and your romance for her work, and so generous.
Yeah. And so elegant. And believe
so
me,
elegant.
I didn't understand her when I was a young person.
Yeah.
She's a very shy.
Yep.
Yes. Shy woman.
True introvert, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay, so you're the modeling, then leaning into the HIV AIDS.
Well, when they asked me to come back.
Right, so you're wearing
they said after I did the first one, they said, would I do three more years? And because I recognized that Elizabeth was winding down in her ability to continue to do it.
Right.
And so I said, sure, I would do three more years. And I said, gorgeous. Thank you.
That's the way to eat
enjoy
the burger. Thank you so much, sir.
Of course. There she goes with me.
Yeah, look at that.
So, of course, I said, sure. Mmm, those fries.
Right? Okay.
So I said, sure, I would do three more years. And, you know, I'm a problem solver.
You are. Oh, excuse me. You are a problem solver.
I'm a person that gets that stuff off my desk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person that, you know, if something needs to get done, I do it today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person that, like, if there's an issue, I'm not the person that, like, likes to talk around it. If someone's doing something that's just bullshit, I'm like the person that calls bullshit.
Right.
I'm.
You are a truth teller.
I really am.
I know it.
It concerns people.
Yeah. Of course.
It really concerns.
They don't like that.
No, they don't. And frankly, I don't always like it. I don't like that I'm not, you know, more suave. People are lauded for diplomacy. But I think there's a lot of time wasted with people not talking about what's really actually going on.
100%.
You know, my dad always used to say, you know, I like, give it to me with the bark on.
Right.
And people think that it's cruel a lot when you just say it the way that it is.
Right.
I feel like if I really respect you, I'm going to tell it like it is.
Yeah.
And if I don't respect you, I don't really care
what
you think or what you, if you want to know or anything, because it's not worth my time to get into it with you, because you're not going to get it.
Right.
And why bother?
Right. I mean, it's dig in because we're going to, we'll dig around the food eating, but we gotta
and
eat.
That's not it. You know what I mean?
And I think that one of the things that's consistent with what you can see with your life and your career is your ability to tell the truth and say, this is no, this is not the way this is going to go down. Like, I see it as it is. And I think that is so refreshing. You like that? I mean, the burger. I mean, come on. Which I love. I love about, I really admire that, Sharon, about you. And I've seen it from the distance that, you know, I find it so interesting how life
gets me in trouble.
I see that it's gotten you in trouble. Like, of course, because people don't want, because they want people to fit in their zones, you know, like their buckets. And then all of a sudden you have you.
But
so you come with all this smarts, this brain, this body, this beauty. That's threatening, I think.
Well,
this truth.
Right.
No?
Right.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so
There's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to my lunch with Sharon Stone on Table for Two. With burger in hand and some crispy fries, Sharon told me about a wardrobe emergency that took place right before a pretty major award show. I mean, you tell a story, which I thought was interesting. You get to Cannes, your bag is lost. No one, all these actresses are around with, you know, clothes on racks. And no one wants to give you shit because you're a threat. Do you know what I mean? Like, can you tell me about that? I'm so interested because I think that's a thing that you've been able to sort of beautifully navigate in your life.
When I went to Cannes the first time and my bags didn't come.
Yeah, but you're also navigating people who want to push back on you.
Because and I did. And I didn't have any money. And I couldn't buy new clothes. So I had to keep figuring out how to make what I had on into 16 different outfits.
I love you.
But it's like when I first got invited to the Oscars right before Basic Instinct had come out. The movie hadn't come out. So no one would lend me a dress. And then it came out like a few days right before the Oscars or something. And I was going to present, but no one would give me a dress. It was unbelievable because I didn't have any money to buy anything.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God. All these people in their $40,000, $50,000 dresses.
Right.
And I went and bought a Betsy Johnson jumpsuit because that was it, a polyester jumpsuit. That was the best I could do. And I'm doing my own hair and makeup. Right. And I was just like, wow, like. This is awful. Like, how am I going to do this, right? But then I got there, and I was, like, in the fourth or fifth row back, which was really good.
Yeah.
And I was on the aisle, and I was seated right behind Anthony Hopkins. And when I walked by, he put his hands together and put them over his head like champion and held them up to me when I passed him.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God. He saw my movie.
Right.
And he's giving me that thing.
The champion, like, yes.
Right. And I told my dad, and my dad was like, kid, you could look good in a burlap sack.
Well, that's
right.
At the end of the day.
And I was like, oh, right. And so after that, I thought, you know, it doesn't matter. I could wear a T-shirt to the Oscars. And so I did.
Right. Well, I mean, two things. One is, yeah. That's, you know, your strength, your power of mind and beauty. And you so you're like, okay, you did not go. You went, you threw it on. Mm-hmm. Hopkins is saying, yes, the world's about to see you in a major way. What did it feel like? And how did that journey, the lack of effing generosity of people when you're sitting in a room, you got yourself in that room. And now you have the lack of generosity. Like, but you chose not to leave the room. You're like, I'm here. And that's what to me is.
Well, it was hard because when I got nominated for Golden Globe for that part. And when I went to the Golden Globes and they called my name, a bunch of people in the room laughed.
It was horrible.
Oh my God, it was horrible. I was so humiliated. And I was like, does anybody have any idea how hard it was to play that part?
Right.
How gut-wrenching and frightening and how much work it was to play this part.
Right.
And kind of try to carry this complex movie that was really breaking all boundaries.
Yep.
And everybody was protesting against and the pressure. And I auditioned for it for 9 months.
Which I can't get over.
They offered it to 13 other people. And now you're laughing at me. I was just like, oh my God. I just wanted to crawl into a hole, you know?
Yeah. No, of course you did.
And then, you know, I lost custody of my child. When the judge asked my child, my tiny little tiny boy,
right,
do you know your mother makes sex movies? Like, this kind of abuse by the system, this kind of abuse that I was considered what kind of parent I was,
right,
because I made that movie. People are walking around with no clothes on at all on regular TV now.
Right. All over.
And you saw maybe like a 16th of a second of possible nudity of
right,
me.
Right.
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 And now, and I lost custody. I lost custody
it's
of
horrible.
My child.
How did you survive that?
Are you kidding? I ended up in the Mayo Clinic with extra heartbeats
really?
In my upper and lower chamber of my
really?
Heart.
I did not know that.
It, when you say break your heart,
yeah,
it broke my heart.
It broke your heart.
It
oh,
literally
right. You had
broke.
The prolapse. That broke, right, the whole thing, yes.
Upper and lower chambers. It broke my heart. I went in to get a mammogram and they're like, something's wrong. We need you to do a treadmill test. And I'm like, what? All the doctors came running in. They're like, whoa.
That's crazy, Sharon. And if you look at that moment, would that happen today? We have a whole different,
no.
Right.
No.
You were put through the ringer.
It'd be illegal.
You were playing a part. You like what you said was when an audience comes to see a movie versus like when a critic comes to see a movie, like, you know, we come.
I mean, you know, the guy that played Jeffrey Dahmer, no one thinks that he's a people who eats people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? As he said, you know, this is a very hard part to play. It was very hard to watch.
Right.
I hope we got something from it.
Right. It Evan Peters, exactly.
It doesn't turn him into a serial killer
right.
who eats people
right.
or make him an antisocial person.
Right.
It makes him a very complex person who took an incredibly difficult part,
mm-hmm.
which probably made him ill to play.
Sure.
It is brutal to play these characters.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why I don't play them anymore.
Right.
I don't want to.
And it's one thing for the audience not to understand that piece, if you're an actor, what you have to go through. But it's a whole nother story when your peers and the people in the business are not understanding that. And, like, you're losing custody and you have the legal system and you're like, wait a minute. I mean, you know, this is my job. Like, this is what I'm paid to do. And none of you know. The fact that you went through it is absolutely and literally heartbreaking.
Well, it sort of ended my dating world.
Because men were afraid of you?
And I also think that men didn't want to date a woman that other men thought of like that.
Right.
And that's also a failure of the male.
Yeah.
Reality.
Sure.
That's your own.
It's our own shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, really yeah. is. I mean, come
on. I can't wade through that situation.
Right. Then you go on and you go on to what is like one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen, which is, of course, in Casino. And here you are now.
I was so blessed to have
I
that
mean,
part.
I mean, come on. You're working like you're working with De Niro. You're working
the
with Scorsese. You're working with Pesci.
In you're, the business.
Right.
The greatest directors of all time.
Yes. And there you are. that beautiful face, that incredible performance, that whole thing, that whole transformation from like when you exerts the drugs and it goes dark and everything. First of all, I love that movie.
I love that movie too.
I mean, and
I love those guys. I love that Nick Pileggi script.
Nick Pileggi. He's amazing. So tell me about that. So you go from 92 to 95.
Right.
And then you end up back in the room where they laughed at you. Mm-hmm. You win a Globe. Mm-hmm. You're nominated for an Oscar. Mm-hmm. How does that feel?
I was super surprised. I mean, they told me, we can run you for supporting actress, you'll win the Oscar. You can't win for leading lady. They're never going to let you get a leading lady Oscar.
They're never going to let you get, because of the size of the part or because it was you?
Because it was me. And I said, but I am the leading lady in the film.
Right.
So I want to run for leading lady. And they said, but you won't win. And I said, I don't care.
Right.
I'm not in it to win it. That's not the point here. Mm-hmm. The point is the actual work that I did.
Right.
And I did the work.
You did the leading lady work.
For 5 months.
Yeah.
With Robert De Niro.
Right.
And Joe Pesci and James Woods.
Right.
I did the work.
Right.
So I'm going to be in the category for the work that I did.
Right.
I'm not in it so that you'll say, oh, okay.
Right.
Okay, Sharon. You can have it. Right. You can have the statue.
Right.
No. I'm in the lane that I drove in.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Perfectly said.
And thanks.
Right.
So I didn't expect to get the Oscar.
Right.
Because people don't think of me as an actress. Mm. You know, they don't think of me as a person who loves her craft.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I don't walk around saying that.
Right.
I don't walk around saying, like, I'm a dramatic actress.
Right.
I don't walk around having discussions on TV about my dramatic acting.
Right.
I don't talk about my art form.
Right.
Because I don't think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
Right.
To me, I know, Greta. I know Greta Garbo's looking at me like, explain
Sharon's
this.
Looking at a picture, literally facing like Greta Garbo. That could not be
which
kind
is,
of more
I used
perfect.
To have dinner with her.
You did?
And not with her. This is so wonderful. She lived like 3 blocks from me in New York mm-hmm. when I was a young girl.
Right. She used to walk around New York just
with big hat and
big
her
hat, right.
big coat and her galoshes. And me too. And we would go to this restaurant that was between our houses and sit alone at tables right. facing each other.
Really?
And we had dinner in this same restaurant facing each other dozens of times.
You're blowing me away.
And I never spoke to her and she never spoke to me. But alone in this restaurant, I sat with Greta Garbo.
Wow.
And
that's the universe again.
Right. And she's looking at me like, you're trying to explain this. I know, Greta Garbo. I feel like Greta Garbo right now. It's like trying to explain how the wind meets the trees.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what I do, and this is why I love playing people that already lived.
Right.
Because I feel like I open my soul and let them talk through me.
Right.
And so I'm not a dramatic actress. I'm a spiritual conduit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have the extraordinary pleasure and honor of receiving a script that is actually intended for me, I know it when I get it.
Yep.
And I feel like I knew it when I got the Casino script.
Right.
They didn't know it when I got the Casino script, and they were seeing so many other people.
Really?
And I was just like, I'm gonna wait till they're done with that.
Yeah, I love that. I love your ability to take a step back, because I also feel like one of the big things in life is timing,
yeah.
and when you're seen, and to say, and to have a...
Like, I'm supposed to play Phyllis Diller, and I know that like I'm sitting here with you.
Right.
I just know it.
That's fantastic.
Like,
right?
There are you just know people it. I'm supposed to play, it's gonna happen, or they're going to miss it.
Right.
I was great friends with Phyllis.
Wow.
I went to her house. I had dinner with her multitudes of times. She taught me her laugh. You know, I know I'm supposed to play her. Right. She didn't even get famous at all till she was in her 40s. I'm supposed to play Phyllis.
Right. I love the Greta Garbo, like literally,
and the way she's looking
at Sharon from this picture. I'm gonna take a picture of it,
like,
so I could post it and show people.
It's, like, you're trying to explain.
Yes, she really
the
is
inexplicable,
and that you had all those moments.
It was just so wonderful.
I feel like it's a diner.
I would sit in this table that was to the the left front, and she would sit on the back right, looking forward, and I would sit in the left front, looking back. And I used to just think, this is so great. My dinner is with Garbo.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Table for Two. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, one of the amazing and endearing things about Sharon Stone is that she is so outspoken. Sharon talks very candidly about the harrowing events at the heart of her book, The Beauty of Living Twice. So in your memoir, you know, you're very honest about when you were in your early 40s and you had the brain hemorrhage and like that whole experience. It's so riveting. I'm telling you, read this book. And one of the things...
The Beauty of Living Twice, available on Amazon and any store.
Exactly. Good plug. The fact that you share that you crossed over and you saw people you love made me feel so at peace.
Oh, you should feel at peace.
And even though you got the kick in the chest to come back,
yeah.
So I'd like to know about that and your grandmother coming, saying, don't move your neck.
Yeah.
These are like things because you, and then your strength to say, what are you doing here? As you're being wheeled in, don't do that. I need to know more about this operation before you do it. Like, tell me about those things.
So first of all, when this happened to me, I felt very disenfranchised. I was not getting the help that I needed. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to the hospital for 3 days of this brain bleed.
Are you home?
I was home.
Yeah.
And I was calling and trying and asking and begging and bleeding and wanting to get to the hospital, but couldn't get there.
Right.
Eventually, when I got to the hospital and I had the first MRI and they discovered the brain bleed and they realized how long it had been going on, I was in really bad shape.
Yeah.
That's where I had the initial, what I call like the whiteout, mm-hmm. you know, where I was dying and coming back. They then immediately transferred me to a hospital that had a neurological ICU. And a neurological ICU is just a wheel, a circle around a nurse's station. They're not rooms. And there's just a drapes separating each person. And it's an incredibly traumatic environment mm-hmm. for many reasons, one of which is that neurological pain is unbelievably painful.
Right.
First of all, you don't even know where it is
because
it's all over the place and it's inside and outside of your body. So when it was happening, I was actually holding outside my head. I was holding above my head like I was holding.
That's where you felt the pain?
Yes. In the crown chakra above my head, I was holding this space outside my head mm-hmm. and holding onto it like it was sitting on top of my head screaming. I think I was holding my beingness, mm-hmm. which was literally outside my body.
Yeah.
And so after a few days of this screaming, because they had missed it when they went in they went in it through my femoral artery and scanned mm-hmm. and missed why this was happening to me.
Right.
So I'd been laying on one side, which was less painful. So the blood had pooled on the opposite side of my head.
Oh.
So they didn't know what was going on. And that's really heavy when everybody's screaming and you're all fighting for your life. And all of our beds are on scales.
Right.
And it's your body mass that they're measuring, right? So I lost 18% of my body mass in the 9 days I was in there. And you can only have like a guest at a time. Mm-hmm. And so my friends, my family are there. I had like my ride or die best friend, Donna Chavu. Mm-hmm. She slept in an alcove of a window in the hospital the entire week. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother sat outside the room.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
And I didn't eat and I didn't know what to do. And for some reason, they weren't putting me on nutrition.
Yeah. I'm like about to ask you, you don't have an IV with.
I have saline.
Yeah.
Right? But like, I don't know what's going on. And my dad became so desperate. And so my dad, God rest his amazing soul. He said, would you have a milkshake, honey? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, Dad.
Right.
He went to the store. He bought the milkshake, the ice cream.
Right.
He bought ice. He bought milk.
Right.
He went home. He made me a milkshake. He put it in a mason jar, mm-hmm. packed it in ice, brought it to the hospital, and fed it to me.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That says everything.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I ate.
Right. Yeah.
I think, because, you know, my dad got esophageal cancer after that.
Yeah.
And I always said, you know, that my dad, I know, said the prayer that I say for my children, mm-hmm. which is, give it to me.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Yeah. But any parent wants, of course.
You say, give it to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that my dad got sick because he said, give it to me.
Yeah.
Let her live. Give it to me.
Yeah. Wow. Sure.
And I just think that that's what we do as parents. Mm-hmm. We say, give me the drama. Give me what it is. Let me carry it. Let me help them.
Yeah. Take me.
Take me.
Yeah. But you were able to, between the stories of your mom and your dad doing that, the strength, the survivor in you, to be also to have the voice, because we, so many of us don't have the voice, the courage to say, no, I don't want to do this. I don't understand this. This is power. You've been surrounded by so much power in your life, and you emanate that so profoundly, I feel. It's a hell of a survival story. It really is.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a snappy comeback.
No.
You know, I had to learn to walk.
Yeah.
I had to learn to talk because I came out of it with a really bad stutter. I lost my depth perception.
Right. Wow.
Everything. Hearing blew out in my right ear. I mean, I was walking on the tops of my feet when I left that hospital.
Yeah. It's amazing. The narrative of your life that takes you from Pennsylvania in, like you said, a poor but not a poor family because of how
everybody else.
And then where you land.
Because middle America, my friend, is poor.
Yes.
Is poor.
Yeah. So is the painting that you're doing now, is that an expression? Like, how did that, because you didn't go to university, though you could have gone.
I did go to university.
You went to university.
And I finished and got my bachelor's degree.
And then went back.
Because I was out here, and Hillary Clinton came to talk to a bunch of us.
Ah.
And she was like, you know, you guys have so much power that you don't even realize.
Mm.
You can do anything you want to do. You're an artist, but you can go outside your art form. You can write a song. You can do this.
Right.
You can do that. Because you have more power than you're using. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I started really, I was sitting on the floor because so many of us came, there weren't places to sit. So I was sitting very near her.
Right.
And I was thinking about what she was saying. And I thought, you know what? And so I wrote a song for Katrina.
I didn't know that.
And I wrote the title track song for Come Together Now, the Come Together Now Katrina album.
Really?
I wrote the lyrics.
Whoa.
And I started getting people together. I'm like, we're going to write an album for Katrina.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was like, you can't do that. And you can't get the artists. And
Right. These
artists are all under contract and blah, blah, blah. And you can't do it. And man, let me tell you, the resistance I got. And I never really got the credit for writing the lyrics because you have to really give up.
Right.
Everything in order to get anything done. But I didn't do it to get credit. I did it to get it done.
Right.
Right. And then Planet Hope, my sister Kelly and I's organization, we went down there and we got those soldiers who were holding all the supplies in the trucks because they took the trucks down there, but then they didn't give the stuff to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole bullshit of we're taking all these trucks down, you're like, yeah, they did, but they didn't open the trucks.
Yeah.
So it was like getting them to open the trucks.
Yep.
Well, so Planet Hope went down there and we bought kegs of beer.
Right.
For the soldiers.
Right.
Because guess what? That's how you get the trucks open.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And then we bought things for people that, like, the little things.
Mm-hmm.
Eyeglass prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
How you get your diabetes, your insulin filled. How you get your dentures.
Right.
All the things that, like, the little things that people couldn't get back.
Uh-huh.
Right? And we did the on-the-ground stuff. But, you know, we had a lot of girls from New Orleans and Louisiana. And we call them our steel magnolias.
Yeah.
And those girls, those girls can get stuff done.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So we get stuff done on the ground. We worked with Burlington Coat Factory. We get coats for kids to go to school. We work with, you know, people to donate their seconds so we can get shoes for these migrant workers' kids. You got to get on the ground and get in there. So that's when I started being a lyricist because I was like, oh, wait a second. I can write songs about things that matter. You know, like this Nobel Peace Prize winner was machine gunned to death in his car going to the airport in South America because he was in a car convoy and it was supposed to be like a cartel guy that was gonna be hit and they hit the wrong person. So I wrote a song about that guy. What's it like to know that as these killers are coming towards your car, that's it?
Right.
It's the end of your life and you've spent your life about peace.
You're such an artist.
Right.
I mean, you're such a prolific artist to express yourself in these ways.
And so I thought, you know what? I can do these things. So I went back to college and got my bachelor's degree.
Right, exactly.
Because it's like, yes, I can do this, I can do this, and I'm going to go get my bachelor's degree.
Right.
And when it came in the mail, I was so proud.
Sharon, as we sort of wrap up lunch, because I can literally sit with you. We're going to have many lunches together, I hope.
Good.
Not always. I absolutely
adore you. Because I have questions
you.
For you.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I want to say...
Who interviews you? I'm going to come and interview you for your interview
oh
series.
Oh, my God. Would you do that?
I would
Table
love to.
Table for two with
yes.
Sharon Stone?
Yes.
With Bruce Bozzi, Sharon Stone?
Yes.
Okay. You heard that. We're going to
yes.
do that. That would be an honor.
Yes.
I've described you as a champion, as a survivor, as a truth teller, as easy on the eyes, but I'm also going to say you're pretty chick. And you have to read The Beauty of Living Twice to understand what that means. So pick that up.
And I am.
And you
I'm
really
pretty chick.
Are. You are very. I absolutely adore you, Sharon. Thank you for
Likewise.
Coming.
Likewise.
Thank you. Table for Two with Bruce Bozzi is produced by iHeartRadio, 737 Park, and Airmail. Our executive producers are Bruce Bozzi, Jonathan Haas-Dressler, and Nathan King. Table for Two is edited and written by Tina Mullen and researched and written by Bridget Arsenault. Our sound engineers are Emil B. Klein, Paul Bowman, and Alyssa Midgaff. Table for Two's LA production team is Danielle Romo and Lorraine Virez. Our music supervisor is Randall Poster. Our talent booking is by Jane Sarkin. Special thanks to Amy Sugarman, Uni Scher, Kevin Uvain, Bobby Bauer, Allison Cantor-Graber, and Barbara and Jen and Jeff Klein and the staff at the Tower Bar in the world-famous Sunset Tower Hotel. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.